welcome to Worlds Apart. The nuclear option used to denote an extreme measure of the last resort, but not to European leaders anymore. Germany, Poland, Latvia, Estonia, and even Sweden have all had their leaders' views openly about acquiring nuclear weapons as a means of countering Russia. Is it likely to make the continent a safer place? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by David Swanson, Executive Director at World Beyond War. Mr. Swanson, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, we are recording this interview just days after the Munich Security Conference, at which the European Union and the United States continue deliberating on how they are going to go about their common security and whether it's indeed going to remain common. What's your take on the current state of transatlantic relations?
You know, the word Munich in the United States, the primary meaning of it is somebody making a bad deal that results in a world war. And this, I think, is what Marco Rubio went over and proposed to Europe and the world, was a bad deal that's likely to lead to a world war. It's absolutely disastrous. The big question for a lot of people is the United States is separate from Europe, or are they united? The problem is that either way, and it's to some extent it's both, they're all united behind the idea of war and militarism and more weapons. And so the really big news is that Trump is demanding and getting from the U.S. government and from European governments absolutely unprecedented, unimaginable increases in military spending on nuclear and non-nuclear. And a lot of it will be lined up under NATO, and some of it will be separate European militarism without NATO, but none of it will be aimed at making peace in the world.
Well, Mr. Swanson, to be fair, there are some disagreements among the transatlantic allies. For example, the EU and the United States are in disagreement over the war in Ukraine, but they seem to be in the same camp when it comes to the mass slaughter in Gaza or the bombardment of Iran. When it comes to the issue of war or the issue of militarized interference, do you think there is still some principles that undergird the Western position, or is it more situational at this point of time?
I'm not aware of any governments in NATO or in the European Union or in Europe listening to the voices of their own people, that is, behaving democratically or as a representative republic and answering the demand for peace. When Marco Rubio says your mistake was to fund schools and transportation and energy and retirement, and you need to fund weapons for the good of the world, that's exactly the opposite of what the people protesting in the streets in Munich and in general in political polling across Europe and the United States want. They want less weaponry and more of all those other things that Europe got right, and that Rubio and Trump are telling Europe, you have to follow us and get them wrong now. There are some governments doing a little better than others. Spain is taking a much more sane approach to immigration than everybody else. But generally, there's nobody pushing the rule of law and disarmament and cooperation and human survival.
Well, I know that you and your organization are trying to push those subjects along. You are committed to moving to a world beyond war. But I think in the world that we have today, war has become almost the primary means of international relations. In many cases, it precedes diplomacy. It certainly renders it obsolete. How on earth can you imagine going from the almost intentional perpetuation of conflict to a world without it?
Well, hopefully there's a silver lining here in having a U.S. president who is so open about screaming out loud the things that they used to whisper in proclaiming that the wars are for oil and the wars are for power and the sanctions are to starve the children and so forth. Hopefully there is something in that crazed rhetoric that can produce more resistance. The policies have of course changed as well, but the theme is still there. It's just packaged less war for the good of you and more war to destroy you because you're subhuman and we hate you. And hopefully That can result in some resistance, but it's absolutely out of control at this point. And the doomsday clock is set as close to midnight as it has ever been.
Mr. Swanson, since you mentioned the Trump administration, that seems to be very vocal and proud of its peacemaking effort, I do want to ask you this. I know that you were at one point a Nobel Peace Prize nominee, so was President Trump. Do you share his assessment of the administration peace work? Do you think he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize?
Yeah, it's almost a badge of shame to say someone nominated you for a Nobel Peace Prize, because it's, you know, generally it's used for some good cause that has nothing to do with abolishing war, but everybody supports. Other times it's used for out and out warmongers. And I think they did their very best to give it to Donald Trump. They couldn't give it to him because they couldn't control what he would say when he accepted it. But they gave it to someone who was not saying what they all used to say. When you would give it to someone protesting a target of U.S. empire, you would give it to someone in Iran, for example, they would say, I protest the failures of my government, but I don't want something worse. I don't want our country bombed. Now they found someone who would say, I protest the failures of my government and I want the United States to bomb us. This is a new low for the Nobel Peace Prize and for the so-called international community. And no, I don't think Donald Trump will ever get one, but I think he will claim till his dying day that he's already got one because he pressured someone to give it to him.
Well, to some extent, it is easier to deal with Donald Trump for many governments. And I'm not only speaking about the Russian government, but I've interviewed a number of high-level diplomats, including in Iran, and they would at least say that it's an erratic, very unpredictable government, but at least it's not trying to pretend what it's not. It's not trying to use the moral high ground while obliterating whole communities. Do you think that may lead to a little bit less war-making, just, you know, calling things by their name?
I certainly hope so. I certainly think it's correct to call war departments and stop pretending they are defense departments. But I don't think it's enough when the government and the people funding and controlling the government are in support of war and are calling it a war department as a means of praise, not condemnation. We are on the edge of environmental and nuclear destruction. The United States has put nuclear weapons into six countries in Europe. Two or three of them are talking seriously about putting nuclear weapons into other countries around Europe themselves. Russia has put nuclear weapons into Belarus. I once asked the Russian ambassador to the United States, how can you do such a thing? What about the non-proliferation treaty? And he said to me quite correctly, the United States does it. You know, but the United States doing it doesn't make it okay. Doesn't make it okay for the UK or for France or for Russia. It's madness, and it's going to kill us all.
Well, Mr. Swanson, it certainly doesn't make it okay. But at the same time, I mean, we do have to recognize the reality on the ground, and many countries do feel threatened by Western hegemonism. And I do want to ask you about that, because war is a very expensive undertaking. It's resource sapping, and your peace message resonates with many people around the world, including in this nation. But historically, it has been the West being in a more advanced position technologically and strategically that has launched acts of aggression on other nations. And the question here is, how could those nations defend themselves without resorting to a kinetic force? Is the West amenable to anything else, to any other forms of persuasion?
Well, it certainly is, and it has been, and we've seen over the past 100 years or so the growing success of unarmed, nonviolent resistance to invasions. We're seeing it on the streets of the United States right now, where a paramilitary force has been turned against the United States government's own country. But we have seen successful overthrows of occupations and invasions and tyrannies through unarmed civilian defense. among other tools, which is something that governments know can be very effective.
Okay, what was the last example, historic example of that? Because I've been a war correspondent for quite a number of years, and I don't remember, don't recall any recent example of a nation, once it is threatened by the United States or by the West, defending itself through the nonviolent means.
Well, numerous threatened invasions of that part of the world have been held off by nonviolent activism, and numerous countries in recent years and months in Korea and Bolivia and across Africa have seen coups reversed, not the U.S. government, but coups reversed. I mean, to the history in why did the Russian military leave the Baltic states? Why did they get out of Estonia? It wasn't guns. It was people en masse singing songs until they left. And if for a while, governments started to learn that lesson, even in the Baltic states. They put unarmed civilian defense agencies into their government, but it's been allowed to lapse and not been kept up.
Well, I think there was also a lot of assistance from, covert forces like Western security services that supported these democratic movements only as a means of their own military expansion, which leads me to a question on Ukraine, because it's very close to home for many of us. And this is a conflict that my country, Russia, has tried to forestall. You know, there were numerous rounds of negotiations and, you know, appeals to the West not to expand its military alliance closer to our border, but they, fell on deaf ears. Do you think in case of, let's say, Russia or China, those large nations with nuclear weapons, do you think they have had any success in persuading the West to stay off?
I think the accusations from both sides on Ukraine are pretty accurate. I think the U.S. government did everything it could to facilitate a war in Ukraine and prevent its resolution or ending, as it's continuing to do so to this day, insisting on NATO expansion. And I think the Russian government knew perfectly well that invading Ukraine in a major way would give NATO the biggest boost it had ever seen, would build the popularity and support and add nations to NATO in a way that NATO by itself could never accomplish, and did it anyway. You know, and this is how the arms race and the vicious cycle of violence continues, with back and forth provocations by people who aren't able to think outside that trap.
Well, I think people who think outside that trap also took measures into their own hands and decided that if the West breaks its promises, that perhaps it should not be believed. And perhaps, and I'm speaking about the Russian offensive here.
Never be believed.
Well, it's not to be believed, but the question is how do you deal with the West? Because I agree with you that war is the most horrible thing you can imagine. And unlike you, for example, I have relatives in Odessa, and when we call them, we can hear the bombardment going on. But the question is, if you don't do that, how else would you secure your own security? How else would you make sure that, you know, this glorious Western alliance doesn't come to your doorsteps?
Well, my job as a resident of the United States is to focus on opposing the U.S. government and trying to reverse just about all of its policies, which are leading us to global destruction. But were I a foreign government, I would do everything I could to strengthen universal international law that can hold accountable the individuals and the government of the United States, even at the risk of holding accountable individuals and governments outside of the United States. And I would love to see some of the more powerful nations of the world support the International Criminal Court and support the International Court of Justice and support disarmament and human rights treaties with or without the United States, because I don't think spheres of influence is going to save us. I think the universal rule of law for all is going to save us. And if that means starting without the United States and BDSing and boycotting and sanctioning and divesting from the United States, that's preferable to war.
Well, that's certainly preferable to war. The question is whether it's going to work when the overwhelming military force is on the side that is not intending to support that universal rule of law. But Mr. Swanson, let's take a very short break. We will be back to the discussion in a couple of minutes. Stay tuned.
I see you're washing the Moscow mules. And we're gonna brainwash the crap out of you.
Getting word from Red Square.
Who are you? I don't care what my voters say.
I am not a warmonger. I am a peacemaker.
Eating the dogs, eating the cats.
Huggy, there you go. All squeaky clean.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with David Swanson, Executive Director at World Beyond War. Mr. Swanson, I mentioned the Munich Security Conference in the beginning of our conversation, and we heard a couple of European leaders muse about creating their own security, European security, possibly augmented by a nuclear component. This is something that German Chancellor Friedrich Merz briefly mentioned. We also heard the Polish president speaking about Poland needing to start its work on the nuclear defenses. How serious do you think they are? And do you think the United States would allow its European allies to go down that route?
I think it might, but I think its preference would be to put U.S. nuclear weapons into more European countries, since it already has them in six, and it considers that to be in compliance with the Non-Proliferation Treaty, because it claims they aren't in possession of those countries. They still belong to the United States, as I think Russia has the same position on its nukes in Belarus. And yet at the same time, those countries claim this perverse, misguided prestige of having nuclear weapons, even while claiming that they don't really have them. The U.S. has them within their so-called country. And I think that's what the U.S. is going to try for. But the notion that that defends, that that protects, that that doesn't put a target on your back, the way the U.S. military bases, where the U.S. won't even tell other governments whether nuclear weapons are ever there or not, puts a target on your country is not defense. This notion that we haven't had World War III yet and therefore nuclear weapons deter wars. Well, they don't deter non-nuclear wars. They don't win wars. They don't deter terrorism. And the evidence that they deter nuclear war is just imaginary.
I think it's well articulated, well known, that one of the reasons that Russia embarked on its military operation in Ukraine is because it strongly objected to having Western military installations, including nuclear arsenals, in Ukraine so close to Russian borders. And it's not just about pride. I mean, there is a major strategic component there because it highly increases the risk of nuclear mishaps, because it diminishes the flight time, and you simply won't have enough time to tell whether it's a technical malfunction or whether it's a real attack, not only for Russia. I mean, the same applies to the West. So my question to you is, why do you think this argument is so hard to take on the Western side? Why do you think the Western side insists on pushing all of us, not only Russia, but all of us, into this nuclear corner?
I think a lot of top officials in the U.S. government, like some others, are quite sociopathic, are absolutely indifferent to the risk, to the human suffering. And when they claim that it's just a jobs program or it's just a money-making scheme and nothing's going to go wrong, they actually think that. And the fact that there's a parallel to the Cuban Missile Crisis, when the Soviet Union had missiles near the United States and the U.S. government absolutely lost its mind, and the U.S. has put nuclear-capable missile facilities in Eastern Europe, very close to Russia, and expects Russia not to say a word. This is lost on them because everything has double standards. And the wrong lesson was taught in the United States from the Cuban Missile Crisis. The fact that Kennedy's White House had agreed to also take U.S. missiles out of Europe was hushed up. Instead, we were all taught that Kennedy thumped his chest and acted tough and the Russians backed down. And so what actually works? Diplomacy, cooperation, negotiation, the rule of law is buried in the teaching of history, and the wrong lessons are learned, even though the parallel now should be that Russia acts tough, which is, of course, what Russia does. It invades Ukraine.
Well, I think Russia does act tough, but it also is acting strategically. And I think one of the major points that, for example, President Putin made on a number of occasions is that, you know, unlike during the Cuban Missile Crisis, the technology now doesn't allow much room for even consideration. I mean, we have such a supersonic technology, but the decision on whether, you know, a retaliation strike should come will be made by human mind. And human minds, you know, that individual who will be responsible for making that decision needs some room, some space to double check whether, you know, whether it's indeed a real attack or, you know, just a mishap, of which we have had many.
Yeah, we know now of dozens of near misses, of almost destroying the world. We know of misunderstandings and mistakes on the U.S. side, on the Soviet side. We don't know about China. They may be there as well, but the Chinese have come up with the brilliant idea of not putting the weapons on the missiles, which gives you a delay, which spares you this incredible risk. Why the U.S. and Russia won't consider something so simple and obvious that China can do is beyond me. But we have this notion in the media that the Cold War ended and the problem went away. So now we have a bunch of, you know, whoever couldn't make it in some other department is in charge of the nuclear weapons. We aren't going to have the heroes, the Russian sailors who saved the world, right? Because we've put a bunch of drunks and misfits in the lowest prestige sector of the militaries, and that is the nuclear weapons that nobody cares about anymore. And yet the Cold War never ended. We went from being able to destroy the world hundreds of times to being able to destroy the world dozens of times. That changes nothing. And the New START treaty just ended, the last bilateral treaty between the two, and the non-proliferation treaty is just flagrantly disregarded. So this is way more dangerous than back then.
But Mr. Swanson, some of the proponents of nuclear deterrent would tell you that it's very hard to abolish nuclear weapons when it seems to be, you know, the last resort that, or the last argument that prevents the United States or its allies from attacking sovereign nations, because for better or for worse, the United States has not attacked Russia or China or North Korea militarily. So it seems that, you know, that nuclear option is still valid as a means of protection.
Well, it's not a crazy argument. There's something to it, which is why we need to focus on the U.S. nuclear weapons being eliminated along with the others. But, you know, India and Pakistan got nuclear weapons and right away went to war with each other. They just didn't use the nuclear weapons. So it doesn't stop wars. But thus far, we've been very, very, very lucky not to have a nuclear war. But there is no guarantee that, you know, our luck is going to hold out. And we've got these, you know, Golden Dome fantasies. The Russian and Chinese governments have been open to banning weapons from space. The U.S. government wants to put weapons in space, whether they work or not, whether they risk World War III or not, because they make somebody a lot of money and is willing to threaten Greenland and Canada and God knows what else over this. And this is part of the danger in having someone as unpredictable as Trump running a government that involves these instruments of, you know, absolute elimination of life on Earth.
Well, Mr. Swanson, with all due respect, you had somebody like Biden or like Obama before him who were fairly predictable but still launched a number of military offensive on foreign nations. So you never know with the American president who is actually more predictable. But, you know, putting that aside, as you said, during the Cold War, we had plenty of near misses on the nuclear front, but you know, there was also a little bit more sort of seriousness. The politicians were a bit more cognizant of the danger and more responsible when it came to interstate relations. They were careful about, you know, sending the right signals and not fueling more animosity than needed, as opposed to the kind of irresponsible bravado that we are hearing over the last couple of years. Now, do you have any ideas about how to bring more maturity, more responsible analysis to international relations, particularly in the West? You keep referring to, you know, democratic ways of changing the world, but do you think the current democracies in the West are capable of producing that kind of leaders?
Well, I don't recall referring to that, and we don't have any governments that I would call a democracy or even very representative of popular will. Do I think that people can organize and form mass movements and pressure governments to do better? Yes, of course they can, and to some extent they constantly are, but vastly more is needed. Whether it's enough to save us from omnicide remains to be seen. But we do need to take away the power of nuclear war from individual madmen. You know, I don't care which, you know, horrible U.S. president you like better and which you like less. No single person should have that kind of power. And the U.S. Congress has declared that the president has that individual power to launch nuclear war. That should be taken away. That should not belong to anyone on earth. And then, yeah, we should actually have presidents that are both more predictable and sane and decent and law-abiding human beings. And we haven't had all of that yet. but we did have more predictable before this guy.
But my last question to you is, how do you envisage making it possible? Because, you know, people in the West do form mass movements. They are good, very good at organizing. You know, they can enact meaningful change when it comes to their own communities. And they're very proud of their democracies. But it seems that, you know, going from mass movement to actually influencing the policies of your government is an impossible task. I think even in this country, in Russia, which you perhaps not very complimentary of when it comes to democratic record, but I think as the Russians, we do have much more influence on our government than you have in America.
Well, the history of the United States government hostility to Russia dates precisely to a time when the people of Russia created a new government. I think that things that haven't been done before are very, very possible. And you're talking about something that has been done before. The people of the world and the United States eventually ended the war on Vietnam. They've prevented numerous wars on Iran and Syria and other places in the world. They've also failed many times to prevent wars. They've also restrained and kept wars half the size the madmen wanted. And right now, you're seeing more activism in the United States around a paramilitary force in U.S. cities that's killed a small number of people than you're seeing around a massive, unprecedented military force abroad that's killed many, many thousands of people. And that inversion is due to, you know, what's close to people and what's far from people. And so we got to work on that problem. We got to do better. But you're seeing what's possible in the streets of Minneapolis.
Okay, well, good luck with that, Mr. Swanson. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.